gathered around her little white casket, wrote little notes on her casket. Sorry, just because it did ping and it went off and you got caught.
No. He's obviously the person who
behind the cover.
Yes.
Dismembered, decapitated. Probably because you're trying to hide something and make sure certain details don't come out.
Show cans of soup were found with holes in the lids.
Hey guys, welcome back. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Annie Elise, and this is my channel, 10 to Life, where we talk all things true crime. Nothing is off limits. We talk about old cases, existing cases, the controversial cases. We talk about everything. So don't forget to subscribe by hitting that subscribe button below. That way you can be notified of new videos and anytime we do a live stream, which can be super fun because we're in a live chat. We're all talking and talking about cases together. For those of you who are returning watchers, thank you for coming back and your continued support. Please don't forget to like, comment, share this video where you can. Now, today's case that we're going to be talking about is absolutely wild. It is probably one of the more bizarre cases that I've ever heard. And you're going to want to stick around to the very end because I'm telling you, there are so many crazy details along the way, and you're not going to want to miss a single one. The case we're going to be talking about specifically has to do with the online dating world and how scary it can really be, the crazies that we know are out there, and some actual really horrible stories that have happened. And we're talking about one that was honestly one of the more horrific ones I've ever heard. And as I started researching this case and learning more about it, my interest was immediately piqued. Just what really is happening in this online dating world, especially because we all know we're in this digital age. That's how the majority of people are actually meeting their partner. Rarely are people meeting actually organically anymore, especially in times like we're living right now where we're all in strict lockdown. So I decided I wanted to start researching it a little bit more and see, okay, how common is this? What are some other cases that have happened that are similar to this? And that is when I stumbled across an amazing docuseries called Deadly Dates on Magellan TV. And I have to thank Magellan TV as today's sponsor. You've heard me talk about them before, and they are a documentary streaming service that is truly unbelievable. They offer all different type of genres, so whatever you like, it's gonna be covered. They have genres including history, science, space, and of course, obviously my favorite, and I'm sure yours, crime. I can't get enough of it. There is just so much, and they're offering new things every single week. And the best part is there's no interruptions, which is my favorite because I hate when I am knee deep in something and then a commercial or an ad comes up. I absolutely hate it and it kills my vibe. And Magellan TV is offering 10 to Life viewers a 1 month free trial. All you have to do is click on that link in my description box below. And I'm telling you guys, it is honestly one of my favorite streaming services that I've ever come across. You're going to love it. Give it a try. Tell me what you think because there is so much on there. My next one that I'm binging is all about the Manson family. I can't wait. But I was super deep into this Deadly Date series because I am just fascinated now with how common this unfortunately is. That being said, let's jump into today's case because it is a doozy. Today's case takes us all the way over to Michigan, and this case takes place on Christmas in 2019, so not even an entire year ago. So Kevin Bacon is a 25-year-old vibrant hairdresser from Swartz Creek in Michigan, and Kevin was reported missing by his family on Christmas Day after he didn't come home for a family breakfast. His roommate had said that Kevin went to meet a man the night before on Christmas Eve after talking with him on the dating app Grindr. And if you aren't familiar with Grindr, it's very similar to Tinder, but the majority of the users consist of men. So they meet on Grindr, they go out Christmas Eve night, and later that night, the roommate received a text message from Kevin saying that he was having fun and he might not make it home. However, we now know that the night ended, and the next morning, Christmas Day, he didn't show up for that family breakfast, which alarmed his family, and they reported him missing. Investigators soon discover the man who Kevin met up with that night, and it was Mark Letunsky, 51 years old. Now, Mark was actually a married man, and he was married to a man named Jamie Arnold. They coincidentally also met on Grindr back in 2016. However, in the recent months, they were going through something in their marriage, and they separated in September. And Jamie, Mark's husband, husband said that they separated in September, and ultimately he moved out of the house because of his husband's lifestyle. And Jamie says that there were times he would come home and there was somebody else there. And he says one time he came home, someone was there, he tried to get him involved to have kind of a group thing going on, but he just made dinner and went to bed. And he says he had to get out, he couldn't take that lifestyle anymore. And we know there are all different kinds of lifestyles when people are dating. There's open dating, open marriages, open relationships, what they call thruples, where it's three people together in a relationship. Really, there's all different types. But Jamie had realized, you know, this isn't the lifestyle for me, so I'm gonna bounce. And that was just a couple months before Mark went on this date now with Kevin on Christmas Eve. A couple of days later, on December 28th, a tip led investigators to Mark's house, which was just 25 miles east of where Kevin lived. Upon their arrival at Mark's house, the Michigan State Police were granted permission by Mark to enter and search his home. Once inside, investigators discovered Kevin was inside the home. Kevin was found naked, hanging upside down, bound by his ankles from rafters in the ceiling. You're hearing that right. Yes. Hanging naked upside down by his ankles from rafters in the ceiling. Mark admitted to killing Kevin by stabbing him in the back, and then he says he slit his throat. He reportedly also recounted tying a rope around Kevin's ankles and fastening it to his ceiling rafters. Authorities said he also revealed, and this part is a little gruesome, I just want to warn you, he revealed that he severed Kevin's genitals with a knife and then ate them. Like a cannibal ate them. It's pretty gruesome, I know. But just wait, because it gets even more bizarre, if you can believe. Right after his confession, Mark was of course arrested and charged with one count of open murder and one count of mutilation of a human body because of that dismemberment and cannibalism. I don't know what else to call it. That's what it is, cannibalism. Investigators spoke with Mark's husband, Jamie, because they wanted to get a sense of when's the last time you spoke with him, talked to him, saw him? Did you have any idea that he behaves this way? Was there any indication? And Jamie tells them that he spoke with him the Monday before Christmas because he actually had his own personal car that broke down and he needed to get a rental car. And Mark was the only one who he thought he could call for help. And then he also says that on Christmas Day, he felt bad that Mark was going to be alone. So he called him, invited him to come over. He was already having friends over. So said, you know, if you have nothing to do, I don't want you to be alone, come on over. And he says that Mark did come over around 1 or 2 in the afternoon. He says that he appeared to be normal. He wasn't exhibiting any abnormal behavior or anything out of the ordinary. But remember, this was Christmas Day, which was the morning after, or I should say the afternoon after, he met up with Kevin off on that Grindr date. Jamie continues to go on and say that on Friday, the 27th, which remember, this is now a couple of days after that date, but still one day before they discovered Kevin's body, he says that Mark came over to take the rental car back and said, you know, you can use my car, I'll use my truck, it's fine, that way you don't have to waste your money. And so Jamie says that he took Mark back to his house, but that he never went inside. And he says he dropped him off at about 10:30 that night, and he had to work the next day, so he got out of the car, he went inside, and then Jamie left. Now remember, this was literally one day before they discovered Kevin's body inside that house. And Jamie was adamant that he never went in. He never saw Mark displaying any types of odd behavior. And so he just drops him off. He goes inside and then Jamie leaves. Well, we all know what happens next, that the very next day they go to Mark's house. He allows them to search and they discover Kevin. But here's where things start to get a little bit more interesting and where we start to learn a little bit more of Mark's history and what could possibly have been going through his mind in those moments or even in the months leading up to these moments. Mark's attorney immediately requested that a competency evaluation take place. And this generally happens when you think that somebody is going to plead insanity or that they weren't in the right sound mind at the time. And so he wants this evaluation to determine if Mark really would be deemed competent to stand trial. As his attorney is asking for this evaluation, he speaks out on the mental state of Mark. And he says that he believes he's named somebody else. He believes he's from a royal family outside of Wales and part of the Thomas clan. And he says just the nature of the crime itself, you've got to now send him in for evaluation, which is true. It was a pretty crazy and gruesome crime, and you wouldn't think that somebody of a sound mind would necessarily do something that extreme. He goes on to say that Mark has been very cooperative with the police department, the attorneys, and that everybody has spoken with him, and that his investigator has also gone in and spoken with him. He says he's polite, he's cooperative, and he says that Mark is seemingly normal with the exception of these grandiose stories stories that he seems to believe are so true, such as being a part of the royal family or his name being something else. And on the flip side, the prosecutor side, that this was all a ploy to argue insanity and to basically get out of this charge and not have such a harsh punishment that we know was going to be, of course, coming down the pike. Records also stated that Mark had been committed to hospitals more than four times in the past for mental health issues, and one of those run-ins actually involved a custody issue with his four children. So in 2013, Mark was charged with taking two of his four children away from their mother. Those charges were ultimately dismissed, nothing came of it, but this was all in the record and in the past that everybody was looking into. And just a few months before all of this took place, in August, and particularly on August 22nd, 2019, Mark's ex-wife requested that his parenting time be suspended, claiming that he was diagnosed with major depression, paranoid schizophrenia, and features of a personality disorder, both in 2010 and 2012. So now you start to see that he has a little bit of these mental health issues peppered in his past. There's records indicating some odd behavior in the past as well. So it does allude to a little bit of likelihood that something might not quite be quite right mentally. So just a couple of weeks later, on January 8th, the judge granted Mark's attorney's request for that competency evaluation hearing. And Mark would undergo the evaluation at the Center for Forensic Psychiatry to determine if he's fit to stand trial. If found fit, he would undergo a criminal responsibility test, which would then determine whether he was competent at the time of the slaying itself. So there's two pieces of it. There's the piece of, okay, is he competent to stand trial? But also, was he competent and in the right frame of mind when the slaying actually took place? And this evaluation would take roughly 60 to 90 days. And in the interim, while undergoing the evaluation, Mark would stay, of course, in jail and he would be in custody. Due to COVID and all of the delays happening in the court systems right now, there wasn't a decision made until this week. And on Monday, on the 5th of October, the County District Judge Ward Clarkson ruled that Mark is deemed competent to stand trial. So we are moving forward. He is going to trial. Now, as I said earlier, here's where things start to get a little bit more bizarre and odd, if you can believe it, because here's where we start to take a little bit deeper look into Mark's past and just a deeper look into things in general. After taking a deeper look into Mark's history, this shows that this wasn't just an isolated incident, and we start to paint a picture of a much larger lifestyle choice that was going on in Mark's life. After the news of this horrific tragedy came out, one of Mark's neighbors, Michael Parks, spoke out, and he paints a very clear picture as to an experience that he saw firsthand with Mark and this lifestyle choice, we'll call it. And here's what he says. He says that he had encountered a man that November on his front porch, covered in blood, knocking on his door. He says he had purple hair, he was wearing a leather skirt, and he had a couple of belts across his chest. He says, this man was grasping my arm with deathly fear and screaming, help me, keep him away, just keep him away from me, screaming at the top of his lungs. This man was reported to have been saying, he just wants to hurt me, he just wants to hurt me. And as this is happening, Mark approaches. And Mark is also wearing a leather skirt, belt across his chest, no shoes, no shirt on, and his beard is in braids. And the neighbor describes him as just a very odd-looking gentleman. So Michigan State Police quickly arrived within minutes, took this bleeding man with them. No charges were ever filed against Mark for that incident. So this started to bring a lot of speculation around, and especially after talking to Mark's partner, Jamie, okay, was his lifestyle one that was maybe a little bit of a sub and dom, or was it something where there was a little bit more of like kinky tendencies? Because again, similar to different dating lifestyles, people have all different sex lifestyles, different things that they're interested in, different things that they want to try or participate in. So this started to really just kind of uncover what that lifestyle really was for Mark. And again, as how I mentioned earlier, it wasn't an isolated incident. There was a bit of a pattern with this. And even on some of Mark's dating profiles and Facebook profile, he would make posts that would lead you to believe that this was something he was interested in. A lot of leather, a lot of chains, a lot of these belts. So just kind of into that, I don't know if it's sub and dom, but something a little bit more, not angry, something a little bit more rough behind closed doors. The neighbor goes on to say that he believes that man that he encountered on his porch that day could have very well have been another victim. And he says, every time I even start to think about what went on inside that home, my stomach turns and I don't even want to entertain those thoughts in my head because it just gets creepy. Which I can't imagine having somebody knock on my door on my porch and be experiencing that same thing and just be scared for their life and bleeding and saying he wants to hurt me, and then seeing the person walk up, I can't even imagine how overwhelming that must have been. Police say that it's very likely that Mark engaged in this type of behavior with other people in the past, and they also believe that there are other potential victims who could be out there but are too scared or too ashamed to come forward, and they continue to investigate into his past while they're also investigating into this murder of Kevin before they go to trial. So this is just one story, because as I mentioned, if you watch Deadly Dates and you look into some of these online dating stories, there are a lot of crazy ones. I mean, we know the Craigslist killer, which is one that really hit everybody and everybody's heard of it at this point. But it goes to show, first and foremost, if you are going to meet a stranger online, be very careful about it. Tell somebody where you're going. Check in with them regularly throughout the night. You can't be too careful these days. And it also tells us if we see something that feels a little off, we need to say something, because who knows if that neighbor, and again, this isn't at all any of the fault of the neighbor, but who knows if he had said something or reached out to Mark's husband or reached out to friends or somebody of that nature, maybe this could have been prevented. So if you see something that feels off, it's always best to say something, because you never know if somebody may be impacted and affected by it down the line, especially something that could unfortunately be something as disastrous as to end in murder, torture, or both, like this situation. I know this case was a crazy one, so I appreciate you sticking through it with me until the end. If you guys enjoyed the case coverage, don't forget to hit that like button below and comment, like, share this where you can. I really want to hear your feedback. Do you feel like this was an isolated incident? Do you feel like this was a pattern maybe in his lifestyle and that it went too far? Is that a possibility? Let me know what you think and share your feedback in the comments below. Don't forget to show your support to the channel by hitting that subscribe button below. And if you want to join the official 10 to Life community, hit that link in the description box below and you can get direct access, VIP perks, special 10 to Life emojis, a lot of fun stuff. And a lot of you guys have been joining lately, which I've been seeing your emojis pop up in the chat and it makes me so happy. I'm glad you like them. So if you're interested in joining as well and being an official 10 to Lifer, click that link below. Thanks so much for listening with me today, guys. I will continue to keep you updated on this case as it goes to trial and let you know what comes out of it. And hopefully we do get justice for Kevin and figure out where this all went wrong and what really happened. And until the next case, stay safe. All right. Bye, guys. Have a good week.